You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Because as it turns out, ENC had been leaking its configuration and certificate files for more than a year on a publicly exposed server. Meaning, if I was able to get that certificate and I was, let's say, happened across to steal your Sony flash drive or your SanDisk flash drive or your USB hard drive and you were using this, I could use that certificate to simply unlock your drive and decrypt it. Outstanding. Hopefully they'll come up with a replacement certificate soon and lock that down. So when you see an update from ENC Security for your Data Vault software, update it yesterday. Super, super important. Moving on. Heads up, anybody that uses an Eufy, E-U-F-Y, camera, specifically the ones that claim local storage, because security researchers found that Eufy's supposedly cloud-free cameras were uploading thumbnails with facial data to cloud servers. Outstanding. Now, The Verge, working with security researcher known simply as Wasabi, first tweeted the problem, confirmed that it could access Eufy camera systems encryption-free through a Eufy server URL. This makes Eufy's privacy promises of footage that, quote, never leaves the safety of your home, is end-to-end encrypted and only sent straight to your phone, highly misleading, if not outright dubious. It also contradicts what Eufy and also Anchor, they own Anchor, A-N-K-R, what their senior PR manager told The Verge that, quote, it is not possible, end quote, to watch footage using a third-party tool like VLC. Now, Eufy issued a statement in response to the findings from The Verge and a security researcher, and I quote, Eufy Security adamantly disagrees with the accusations levied against the company concerning the security of our products, end quote. They say a lot more in their statement, but that's the gist of it. They also encourage you, the Eufy camera owner, to contact them if you want to discuss this. So we're going to see who's right here, but in the end, it's never a good thing, especially when independent security researchers are confirming this. Never a good sign. So heads up, Eufy camera owners. Moving on. Let's head down under to Australia and talk about Telstra. Now, Australia's largest telecom is Telstra. They basically said about a week ago Sunday or so, as you're listening to this, that 132,000 customers were impacted by an internal error that led to the disclosure of customer details. Telstra has 18.8 million customer accounts, which is equivalent to 3/4 of Australia's population, and they said that an internal review found the details basically that were made publicly available due to a, quote, misalignment of databases, end quote. So if you're down under, and I actually do have listeners down under, and you're using Telstra, heads up to you, definitely check in. You may be entitled to compensation. Moving on, let's head back over to Canada. We are talking now about the province of Ontario's COVID-19 vaccine management system, because 12 months after police charged two men with compromising Ontario's COVID-19 vaccine management system, the province has identified and started notifying the 360,000 residents whose personal data was copied out. Now, the two people, one of which is a 22-year-old from Gloucester, Ontario, who worked at the Vaccine Contact Center in the Ministry of Government and Consumer Services, and also a Quebec man, have been charged with unauthorized use of a computer. So heads up to you, if you're listening to me in Ontario and you are, I guess, got a vaccine from the government, you might have been compromised. Go check it out. Moving on, let's talk about Veros Credit, because on December 8th of 2022, they reported a data breach to the Texas Attorney General's office after they learned that an unauthorized party was able to access confidential consumer information. And here we go. So we're talking consumer names, address, social security, driver's license numbers, financial account information, insurance information, and medical information were compromised. Veros Credit sent out letters. If you didn't get one and you use Veros Credit, you still might want to check in, though. Moving on. Let's talk about lighting giant Acuity. This is part of Acuity Brands, the massive Acuity Brands. So basically, what we're talking about is lighting and building management giant Acuity Brands. They've publicly disclosed two data breaches suffered by the company in recent years. Yes, years, including one that may have actually involved ransomware. Now, a data security incident notice published basically a couple weeks ago, Acuity Brands said that it became aware of unauthorized access to its systems and data theft in early December of 2021. The investigation then turned in, basically the investigation into this incident revealed a separate unrelated breach that also occurred in October of 2020, which also involved attempts to copy files from compromised files. It's at the height of the pandemic about 6 billion years ago, as it feels. Now, an investigation revealed that the information compromised in these two incidents belonged to the current and former employees and members of Acuity's health plan. There is no indication that customer information was stolen. So there you go. Heads up, Acuity employees. Never a good look, even if our data wasn't breached and you're using Acuity anything. Moving on, let's talk about Florida's Department of Revenue. This is the state of Florida's IRS. A security researcher, Cameron Mosin, discovered a flaw in the Florida Department of Revenue system, which exposed 713,000 customers, including their social security numbers, physical addresses, and bank account details, along with other sensitive information, including names, emails, physical and mailing addresses, business names with other associated critical information, visa info, employee identification numbers, social security numbers, bank account details, and on and on and on. So if you live in the state of Florida, and I do have affiliates down south, one, please stop having hurricanes. Two, check in with your state Department of Revenue because, wow, you might have a huge problem here. Almost a million of you, or three quarters of a million, I should say, do. Moving on. Let's talk about a popular HR and payroll company, Sequoia. Now, Sequoia said in disclosures to customers at the beginning of December that it detected unauthorized access to a cloud storage repository that contained an array of sensitive and personal data related to the company's Sequoia One customers. So heads up to you, Sequoia One customers. Sequoia notified both its corporate customers and individual people whose data may have been impacted by this breach, which they say happened between September 22 through October 6 of this year. Now, the company is offering victims 3 years of free Experian identity protection services. Sequoia's breach cloud system stored an array of sensitive personal data because, again, HR services. So you think of personally identifiable information, they've got it. We're talking names, addresses, dates of birth, gender, marital status, employment status, social security numbers, work email addresses, wage data related to benefits and member IDs, as well as other ID cards, COVID-19 test results, vaccine cards and basically vaccine cards that individuals have uploaded to employment system and more. So personally identifiable information, personal health information, not a good look for Sequoia. So if you or your company uses Sequoia One for all your HR and payroll needs, you gotta go talk to them. And finally, and we have a few finalies, interestingly enough, for you this week. This has been a really interesting week and possibly a bit of a black eye for the cybersecurity community, and that's where we're going to start. Indian cybersecurity firm Cloud SEK, and this is an interesting one because Cloud SEK says that a threat actor gained access to its Confluence server using stolen credentials from one of its employees' Jira accounts. Now, if you don't know what Confluence or Jira are, they are basically productivity and management tools that many businesses, especially large businesses, use to coordinate actions, control things, all those kinds of things. Very, very popular, Confluence and Jira, in business management. So while some internal information, including screenshots of product dashboards and three customers' names and purchase orders, was exfiltrated or removed from the Confluence wiki, Cloud SEK said that the attackers did not compromise their databases, although the threat actor is now trying to sell Cloud SEK's alleged database for $10,000 US and the code base and employee engineering product documentation for $8,000 a pop, also US. But here's where it gets interesting. This is what makes this different than any other exfiltration, ransom, all that kind of stuff. Cloud SEK has already tightened its circle of suspects. And in an update to their blog, basically their CEO, Sassy, claims another cybersecurity company known for tracking dark web developments may be behind this breach. And to quote, "We suspect a notorious cybersecurity company that is into dark web monitoring behind the attack. The attack and the indicators connect back to an attacker with a notorious history of using similar tactics we have observed in the past." Now, the publication Bleeping Computer reached out earlier today for more information, but a company spokesperson refused to provide additional details on the name of the cybersecurity outfit suspected of this breach. That is obviously a huge, huge problem in the sense that we in cybersecurity, basically we're one big overworked and understaffed family. And so it is best when we collaborate. And if we have one cybersecurity firm breaching another, it gives us all a bad eye. It lowers the trust that people will have in our cybersecurity offerings or our defensive capabilities. We are constantly trying to collaborate with others. I have multiple colleagues that are in my field, that are in multiple companies, and I do not compete with them. I try to collaborate. They'll ask me questions and I'll give them my answers. I'll ask them, they'll give me their answers and all of that. That is when we are working best. And so I'm hoping that Cloud SEK is wrong. I'm hoping that while nobody should go through a breach, I'm actually hoping it's criminals and not a legitimate cybersecurity outfit. That is seriously not cool. But we are not done with finalies, because it has been an absolutely bonkers couple of weeks. Now we're going to talk about multiple restaurants in Cincinnati. And this is another interesting one, because multiple restaurants in Cincinnati, Ohio, are fighting cyber attacks and attackers who have stolen thousands of dollars, damaged their reputations, and even shut down their social media sites. So here's what's going on. And from the perspective of a restaurant in Cincinnati called Arnold's, their owner, Chris Berdine, said that the thieves hacked into one of their social media accounts and then got into their Facebook site. Once there, they were able to tap into bank accounts associated with Arnold's Facebook. The thieves bought ads, turning basically money from bank accounts into Facebook advertising currency to be used in other countries. To ensure that Arnold's couldn't get back into their social media accounts, then the attackers posted severely inappropriate material that got Arnold's account banned for life. And according to their owner, Chris Berdine, and I quote, "I'm like super banned. I couldn't be more banned since they posted explicit material. It triggers an auto ban. So that auto ban hit me. Then it blocked me from getting my business page. Then it blocked my personal Instagram and Arnold's business on into Instagram. So we've been completely shut out of all social media," end quote. That is a massive, massive problem for a small business like a restaurant in a locale. And there you go. Now, on top of this, Crown Restaurant Group around Cincinnati also reported similar attacks on four of their restaurants, and other restaurants were hit that were mentioned, but they were not mentioned by name. And this really underscores, I think, how important it is to calculate reputational risk when you are talking about cybersecurity and cyber defense. Everybody thinks that cybersecurity starts and stops with an antivirus or a firewall or some kind of detection technology. Those are important, but what we do in cybersecurity is quantify risk and then attempt to mitigate it in various ways. One way would be the technologies that we leverage. The other ways would be understanding damage to reputation, meaning if I'm advising Arnold's, I'd say, okay, what happens if you're locked out ever, like from all of your social media accounts? What does that do to your revenue? What does that do to your reputation? You know, how do you recover from that? That is obviously a very huge issue. And so if you're not calculating that, then you don't know how much money really, honestly, you should be spending on really hardening those things down, locking them down, educating your employees that have access to this, you know, testing them on phishing, these kinds of things. That's usually how attackers get in. So this is a huge, huge problem. And finally, and oh boy, heads up to you. You're listening to me on the radio, but you're probably not listening to me on Sirius XM because I'm not on that platform. But we have to talk about Sirius XM, and this is a huge issue because newly revealed research shows that a number of major car brands like Honda, Nissan, Infiniti, Acura, Hyundai, et cetera, were affected by a previously undisclosed security vulnerability that would have allowed an attacker to hijack your vehicle and steal your data. Now, according to researchers, this vulnerability is in the car's Sirius XM telematics infrastructure and would have allowed an attacker to remotely locate your vehicle, unlock it, start it, flash the lights, honk the horn, pop the trunk, and access sensitive info on you like your name, phone number, address, and vehicle details. This is great. I also use Sirius XM. Now, after poking around the code related to various car apps, the researcher that found this, Sam Curry, and his colleagues discovered an authentication loophole inside of the infrastructure provided by Sirius XM. I'm sure you know, Sirius XM is obviously found inside most cars' infotainment systems and provides related telematics services to most car manufacturers. And the way Curry explains it, most cars have Sirius XM, quote, bundled with the vehicle's infotainment system, which has the capability to perform actions on the vehicle, lock, unlock, etc., and communicates via satellite to the internet to the Sirius XM API or application program interface. Now, what this means is that data and commands are being sent to and from Sirius by individual vehicles, and that information can be hijacked under the right and circumstances to do everything that I just mentioned. Turn on your car, turn it off, pop your trunk, get information on you, et cetera, et cetera. So hopefully Sirius is going to update this. But one of the biggest problems we have in the car industry is that once the radio rolls off the showroom floor, they leave it alone. I used to have a luxury car back in 2010. I had that car for about 4 years, maybe 5 years, and I would go basically to the dealer and say, hey, is there an update for my radio, meaning my infotainment system? And for years, the answer was no. And I counted almost, 172 vulnerabilities that the Bluetooth system in my German luxury car at that time had. That is a huge problem. Now, fortunately, there are movements to basically update this. The over-the-air updating, for example, that Tesla has is designed to help alleviate these situations, not just improve the car's auto driving or whatever. I don't care if you love or hate Tesla, but everybody, I don't care if you're driving a Ford or a Ferrari, everybody should basically, every manufacturer should be updating these head units as these vulnerabilities are found. So hopefully these vulnerabilities will be fixed in your car by the manufacturer or by SiriusXM. So we'll see where that goes. But those were your breaches of the week. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is entitled Social Media is a Failed Experiment. And this is an article I recently wrote for Smirkanish.com. Michael Smirkanish, obviously being of SiriusXM and CNN fame. And I think this is really important. So I wanted to do a deep dive on this as well, because hear me out. This has ramifications for society, and it really is failed. And here's what's going on. Now, think about it this way. Evolutionarily, humans are social animals. We gather in numbers for protection, to share common experiences, to celebrate, and even to mourn. Our shared existence can bring us together or tear us apart when profound differences arise. Now, the evolution of computing technology has brought the world together in ways that weren't previously predicted, and our mutual experiences have changed humanity forever. However, it's also killing us. And let me explain that a bit more. The social aspects of the internet have always been there, ready to be monetized right from the start. As millions worldwide began using the internet, instant communication with anybody around the planet became a reality, and communicate we did. Now think about it. Platforms like AOL, America Online, or IRC, which is known as Internet Relay Chat, or ICQ, known as I Seek You, were all wildly popular at the dawn of this era. Chat rooms on every topic imaginable were accessible. Enthusiasts from around the globe could gather online and discuss absolutely anything. This evolved into a plethora of websites offering forums on literally everything as well. And then came social media. Now, connecting us to friends, family, and strangers alike, social media was initially seen as an innovative way to keep in touch with others by sharing aspects of our life via written posts, pictures, videos, and more. Unlike chat rooms and direct messages, social media was designed to focus on the individual user first and then the shared experience. The space that people carved out for themselves was seen as their own to share with whomever they wished. Early approaches to this interaction, as seen in the now defunct Friendster, were based on the concept known as Circle of Friends. Essentially, the goal was to build an emotional support structure online around the user by linking them to their closest friends, who in turn could encourage them in some way, shape, or form, or just simply keep in touch with their lives. Now, as MySpace and eventually the behemoth that is Facebook came into fruition, this concept faltered and devolved. And why, you ask? The answer, interestingly enough, is basically multifaceted, but at its core, it's simply this. Some people just suck. And think about that. Some people just suck. Prove me wrong on that. Now, this may not be the popular answer, but it's the honest one. Instead of the idea that a user is surrounded by only close friends known in person, Facebook exploded the idea that you could have thousands of friends and thus an audience to perform for. What the internet and social media also allow for is the ability for people to be both anonymous and or separated physically from those they interact with. While anonymity may be good in general or even required for some, especially dissidents living under oppressive regimes, it has also given a de facto license for mean-spiritedness and aggression. If a person is not genuinely face-to-face with another person in a debate or an argument, and there is no fear of being physically harmed, the worst verbal traits of humanity tend to come out, and we've seen that time and again. I like to say Twitter's where civility goes to die. Nobody has yet to prove that wrong. We saw the warning signs of where we were heading very early on when lawsuits for harassment and defamation started popping up due to online interactions in AOL's chat rooms. The 1996 Communications Decency Act, which famously absolved platforms for the uncontrollable rantings of their user, was a direct result of this. There was literally a lawsuit called AOL v. Zoran or Zoran v. AOL, where this individual was being harassed by a user. He sued that other user, but also sued AOL. This is where this came from. And basically the government said, no, like, you know, AOL is not a publisher. And therefore, by virtue of that, they are basically absolved from this, you know, and here we are. Now, that has obviously changed, and I'll talk about that, but that's a huge thing. Now, as the internet and social media evolved, so did the content media as it related to politics. Politically biased media ecosystems grew to cater to their audience and learned one way or the other. Oftentimes hyperbolic, these 24-hour-a-day news media delivery systems help to drive a wedge into society to the point where a presidential advisor could literally claim that she had quote-unquote alternative facts, thus creating a new reality for her followers and the president's followers. Social media was the supercharger that made this wedge issue 1,000 times worse. Social media's current business model to offer a quote-unquote free service that you pay for by giving up your personal data and information to the platform in exchange for advertisers that target you better for products and services you might be interested in. However, the secret sauce in this equation is artificial intelligence. The AI is configured to try and understand what the user is truly interested in and then prioritize that information to show said user that type of content first. You, the user, in turn get more and more of what you're interested in, so you stay on the platform for longer periods and thus can be advertised to more. This is a multi-billion dollar ecosystem that has expanded into the daily lives of billions of people worldwide. Where this concept went off the rails was a combination of catering to and exploiting the worst traits of people for money while delivering political disinformation to billions that the AI was prioritizing for corporate profit. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. These platforms ceased to be simply publishers that would stand back and say, we take no responsibility, to now starting to prioritize the anger, the hate, and everything else. Facebook went mobile in 2012 and brought instant and addicting social interactions to the world. They created the like button where users could gauge their posts' popularity. Instagram brought the ability to become a star or influencer and the software tools to touch up images and make anyone look better. The net effect this had on the world, especially the teens of the world that were basically were the early adopters of this tech, was increased depression, suicide, image issues, and other mental health issues. For adults, it was a sharing of political disinformation designed to ramp up anger, outrage, and fear, typically against the other side of the political aisle. Studies have shown that Facebook's AI prioritizes, as I just mentioned, anger and extremism in content, pushing it faster and further than it should have ever been allowed to go. With a legion of adults addicted to Facebook while being amped up on rhetoric, it was literally the perfect storm to start mooring societal and political norms. With addicted and depressed kids and their angry parents, the worst of us has been in the spotlight now for years. everybody, and I mean everybody, has experienced anger, insults, and just downright mean-spiritedness online in some way, shape, or form, whether it's happened to you once or it happens to you daily. It happens to me quite a bit, and I'll get to that. You know, so, and as I'm getting to that, writing for Smirconish.com or other platforms like Forbes or having this radio show, you know, on basically nationally syndicated has been a privilege that I have enjoyed for years. But it also comes at a cost. Inevitably, I am called every name in the book for simply stating my opinion in a calm and logical manner. Do you hear me beating you over the head saying one side's stupid or not? I never do that. That's not who I am. But this underscores how broken we are at the moment. It really is. This is the problem that we have. And so the question that I ask is, how do we fix this? How do we actually fix this? There are no easy answers, and open societies will not start removing elements of free speech from private platforms. We can't stop anybody from talking about politics, for example, but we can require transparency from the Facebooks of the world regarding their artificial intelligence and how they deliver information. Forcing the Facebooks and Twitters of the world to deprioritize all political speech, articles, and posts will help to ensure that social media platforms recenter around that initial circle of friends concept. I'm not saying stop posting what you want to post, but if you are getting bombarded, you know, with confirmation biased articles that are angry and possibly extremist, and you're seeing this and you're getting amped up, this is what I'm talking about. You can still get the news. But we have to basically turn the temperature down. We have to return to that circle of friends concept that I talked about initially. Everybody could still read and interact as they see fit, but not having the most hyperbolic of disinformation put front and center.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.